Hello, world family, and welcome to Ripples of Humanity. I'm Rachel Thompson, and through this podcast, I'm sharing interesting stories along my travels of people, projects, and initiatives I discover that are contributing to positive ripples throughout humanity. Today, I'm taking you to Sardana Forest. It's on the outskirts of Auroville in the state of Tamil Nadu in the south of India. Now, this isn't a podcast about Auroville, and I could talk all day about Auroville, but very briefly, Auroville is a universal township that was set up 55 years ago. Now it has over 3,000 people from both India and around the world attempting to live with greater human unity, basically. There is so much information on Auroville's website, so if you would like to learn more, you can go to their frequently asked questions section, which is a good quick way to get some basic information. This is my second time in Auroville. I was here 5 years ago and I'd always dreamed of coming back. I really see it as the kind of place that I can see myself visiting throughout my life to learn, come here and learn more about conscious living, absorbing information from the many workshops, projects and people here, and just absorb the general energy of the place and then bring it into my life wherever I go next. So going back to Sardana Forest, it's on the outskirts of Auroville, and here there's a whole community of people living very alternatively to modern day society, and they're living completely in the forest. 20 years ago, Sardana Forest was actually arid land, and over the years, volunteers have successfully reforested 70 acres of land with indigenous tropical dry evergreen forest. And Sardana Forest work has now actually spread within India and internationally with ecological projects in Haiti,
Kenya and Namibia.
And the Sardana Forest movement, I feel really impacts on environmental, social and economical challenges we face in humanity today. So this time in my adventure to Auroville, I came some days to volunteer in the Sardana community. I was helping cook food, preparing for planting trees and even cleaning the toilets, which are composting toilets, and they actually use human compost to plant their trees, which I found very fascinating to learn about. So I also learned a lot about their way of living while I was there, which felt very refreshing. And above all, I really enjoyed connecting really meaningfully with other volunteers from all over the world in the community. I was lucky today to chat with Luke Marsh, who's originally from the UK and is now a long-term volunteer, having spent the last 7 years in Sardana Forest. I hope you enjoy hearing from Luke and learning more about what Sardana Forest is all about. I'm here in the wonderful Sardana Forest and lucky enough to be chatting with Luke, who's lived in Sardana Forest for 7 years. Is that right?
Yep,
cool. Thank you so much for making the time to chat with me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I think a really nice place to start will be to get a bit of background into how Sardana Forest began and why, like what was the intent behind it.
Yeah, so what we see today, it was never meant to be like that. It was just a small family came because they wanted to find a different way of living, and they tried to explore other places, and they didn't find the place that was calling for them, so they decided to start their own place. And the intention was just to live in a more compassionate way and to plant trees. So they came with their three-year-old daughter. They had another daughter later on who was born inside the forest, and they started planting trees and just living in a very simple way, in a sustainable way. After 4 days, a volunteer showed up and said, "Hey, I heard you're living here and you're planting trees. You want some help?" And then they came and helped. And a few days later, another volunteer came. And then within like a month, a couple of months, there was like 30 volunteers already here. The word kind of got around and people were feeling very connected to this way of living. And when they started here, it was a very dry, barren land. It was like a desert that had been deforested during colonization. And over the years, as more and more people came here, this desertified land, this barren piece of land, was restored back into a forest. And we're now living in that forest, still doing the reforestation work because it's still an ongoing process. And
how many years ago was that?
20 years ago. 20. Yeah, in December 19th, it'll be 21 years.
So that was the intention behind it. And how has that evolved over time?
Yeah, I think the main evolution was no one could have seen it to be what it is today. It was just meant to be their family. It was never this intention to make this global movement where now there are 8 sadhana forests.
They have 8.
5 in India, 3 internationally, so 1 in Haiti. That was started in 2010 in response to the earthquake. 2014 in Kenya, working with the Samburu tribe. We started 4 more in India. And then last year, we started another project in Namibia, working with the Himba tribe. Mm. So I think the scale of it was not even contemplated. Mm. It was just meant to be a small family. And they kind of had this vision that maybe other families would come and want to live like this as well. So maybe there would be other families living here. But volunteers, not so much, because many people, when they were starting this place, were saying that a vegan community that's practicing substance-free, that's not selling anything, that you can't send your children to school, and we're collaborating rather than competing with each other. A place like this, no one's going to want to live like that. Mm. And they said, but we want to live like it, and maybe there's some other families out there that want to raise their children in this kind of environment. But it turned out, actually, a lot of people connected with this way of living. There was something about it that maybe this wasn't the reason that they came here, but the energy that they felt, the experience in here, they connected with it in a very, very deep and transformational way, and it attracted many people, many thousands.
And if we look at the scale now, like let's just do a snapshot now, how many long-term volunteers?
I think our long-term team is very strong right now. Specifically in this Sadhana Forest, we're about 25 people, maybe even closer to 30. We have a few on vacation right now. In the other centers, it's much, much less. The teams are much smaller. This is like the mothership here. This is where it all started, and this is like the training center to kind of the launch pad to send people to the other projects to start doing this this action.
Cool. And I'm going to share some videos as well, just so listeners can get an idea of like what it actually is like here. But what are some of the features that like you think are really cool to highlight?
I think the way we're living, so looking at how we can live in a more sustainable way, and we're looking at from sustainability in a very integral perspective, so every aspect of our lives, so the resources that we're using, so how we're living in natural buildings. So right now we're in a hut. My office is a hut, and it's powered, sad enough for us, by solar, and it's an off-grid community. Using natural materials to make the buildings, using off-grid living, but then looking more details. So we're using compost toilets here. So none of our, we don't use the word waste here, because waste is a human concept. This is something that we as a species invented. You look at nature, it doesn't waste anything. The way we're living, we're trying to find a use for everything that we're using. So even what we would call human waste, that's a resource for us. It's a one-year process, but it becomes compost that we use to plant trees. The way we're using water here, everywhere you'll see water, you'll see the water going back to the plants and the trees around. So everything's being used, and nothing goes to waste. So I think kind of these visual things, when you start to see, you can observe this, the more physical, tangible aspects of it. Once you start to go deeper, you start to understand the social aspect of, we talk about sustainable architecture, but also what we focus a lot here in is social architecture, how you can design a place to naturally bring people together, to naturally engineer compassion inside of people. And this is a word that came from Aviram, the founder, when he was asked to describe this place in 2 words. He said engineering compassion. And that's kind of a fundamental aspect of what we are as an organization. So these things, these you start to see over time of being here, and then the more value-based side of things. So we're living in a way where we're not compromising. We're looking at how we want to live, and with the intention to do things in a more compassionate way, and not compromising on that, being very, very strong with it. So we're a vegan community. We don't want to cause harm, to exploit, to use, to take from animals. We try and be as sustainable as possible, because we don't want to take, exploit, use the environment. We practice gift culture, because we want to give to people. We don't want to take, use, and exploit from people. We want to create this culture of giving and sharing, and we collaborate with each other instead of competing against each other, because with competition, you always have a winner, but you also have a loser. So the more value-based side of things is something that, you can start to understand from a more deeper perspective over a longer period of time.
Yeah, you can really feel those different layers here of what it's, what it represents to be here. Yeah. And Luke, I want to go into, because when I first met you and did the tour of Sadhana Forest and heard about your story, your personal story, I was, I found it really amazing. And I'd love for you to go into that a little bit, if you don't mind.
So, so this way of living, it was new to me as well. Like before coming here, I'd never planted a tree before. In a kind of a somewhat developed town on the not so far from London, working a corporate job, working 55-hour weeks to make a rich person even richer. And I wasn't feeling this kind of strong sense of purpose in my life. And I started to explore and I'd say gather some sort of understanding of what the world is looking like and what's happening in the world, seeing the suffering of people, not just in other countries, but even the people around me living lives that they're not happy about. Also relating that with what I was feeling in these moments as well. I was seeing what it was doing to the environment. And yeah, I what was very clear for me was the way we're living is surely not the only way. And maybe there's a different way that we can do things. And I started to speak to a lot of my friends and family about this. Like, imagine if we could live in community, in harmony, in a sustainable way together where we're working with each other, and everyone would laugh at me.
I was going to say, they must have thought you were a bit...
Yeah, exactly. And they thought I'd crazy, and they say, you're living in this la-la land. This is not how the world works.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, there wasn't much I could say to them because I didn't know there was a different way. That everyone around me, my friends, my family, everyone I ever knew was living in this life, living in the same kind of direction. Maybe some had a few twists and turns in that kind of way of life, but yeah, the fundamental aspect was a commonality with everyone I knew. And so I kept going back to my job, and then I didn't really have anything else to do, but then I started doing more research and I started to come across that actually there are other ways to live, and maybe these people are crazy, maybe it's not really possible and they're just talking about it, but the reality is very different. But I wanted to go see that for myself. I wanted to really, before I commit my life to living how everyone else is living around me, to at least see if there's a different way that I could feel this sense of purpose, this happiness, this this giving back to nature rather than taking it. And then I came across Oroville being kind of the most oldest kind of established alternative community in the world. It was started, more than 50 years ago and has more than 3,000 people living here. So in my search of different places of living, Oroville was the top of the list a lot of the time. And I was looking for places to stay in Oroville, and I came across this small community, Sadhana Forest. And I was going to be here for 2 weeks. And yeah, I guess what I was really looking for when I left was community, sustainability. And I really want to live in a way where I'm not just surrounded by money. Like, I was really disconnected from that, seeing that the effect that it had on people and the world that we live in. And I had a lot of clarity on that. I said, okay, if I can live kind of more or less without money, that's also an intention for me. I came here, and not only did I not stay for 2 weeks, I found my home here. I found so much more than I was looking for, because I was just looking kind of for these kind of free things. And I got introduced to compassion towards people, how we can give and share, and how we can collaborate and work together rather than competing against each other. I looked at found compassion towards children, looking at how we raise children in the world, seeing, having my personal experiences in this institutionalized education system that didn't serve me in such a healthy way. I know it's very relative, different people have different experiences, but my experience, wasn't so positive inside this. Here I was able to be introduced to the ideas of unschooling, where you allow children to learn freely through their own curiosity, what they want to learn, not having adults forcing or telling children, this is what you should do, to be, to act like. So this was a new idea to me that was very powerful and very inspiring. Looking at how to explore how to live in a substance-free way. Before living here, I was indulging in substances more than my fair share. And I felt like that my time for that was over, and I was feeling very ready to explore a different way of being with myself. And so substance-free living was very inspiring for me. And then a huge transformational shift that happened to me here was understanding how we can be more compassionate towards animals. And
because you weren't vegan before, were you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, Sand and Forest is a vegan community. And I kind of knew that, I think, a little bit before coming in here. But I was only here for 2 weeks and I was like, okay, how bad can vegan food really be? I'm sure I'll survive 2 weeks. I won't get protein deficient in that short amount of time. Like, even though these people are probably crazy eating like this. But then I came here as a hunter. The last time I went hunting was about 4 or 5 days before coming to Sadhana Forest. I was the biggest meat eater in my family. When my brother, we would go to restaurants, my brother would get the chicken dish, my sister would get the fish dish, I would have the mixed grill, I'd have as much meat as possible on my plate. And then when I was here starting to talk to people, they didn't sound so crazy because they were talking about, yeah, just not harming and taking from animals. And the way I could see myself living in the world, I wanted to live in a way that where I'm giving and caring and this togetherness, this harmony. And I was thinking from harmony with nature and with harmony with people, but I wasn't really extending that out to domesticated farm animals. And the more I observed why, is because I was conditioned so socialized and normalized at this idea that this is how animals are meant to be in this world. And here I started to see that there was actually a different relationship that we could have with animals. So one very powerful moment was I was talking about world peace just in our main hut. We was having a group discussion. The discussions here always so interesting for me. And as I was talking about world peace, someone came up to me, just walked past, who wasn't involved in the conversation. And he said, Luke, how can we ever achieve world peace when there's so much violence in our diet? And that was powerful for me because I think everyone can connect with this idea of world peace if we could truly live in a peaceful world. And hearing that, I didn't know what to say to it, and it was kind of imprinted in my mind for the next couple of days. It just kept going through. When I had a moment to myself, I was really trying to understand that in its deepest sense and trying to find a justification for how I was living, and it was very difficult. And I had some maybe ideas that were kind of forming, but then the more I'd think about it, I was like, this doesn't make sense. And then the big shift happened to me where here we have an animal sanctuary, we have rescued cows, and they were all destined to go to a slaughterhouse, and we were able to give them a different opportunity at life. And one morning they said, can we have someone help to feed the cows? And I very innocently put my hand up, not quite realizing what I was about to experience, where first off, we just prepare their food, and that's quite nice. You're around them, you're seeing them, they look cute and happy, and I was feeling this connection with them already. And then while they're eating, we're collecting up their poop, and that actually was very meditative for me. It was very peaceful. I remember the sun rising, very quiet, just going around, and I was feeling very calm and very relaxed, and that feeling kind of really kind of sat with me, and it was a beautiful feeling. And then afterwards, they finished eating and they said, okay, we're going to brush the cows now, and can you brush this cow Vishnu? He's like a brown cow with a little white spot on his head. He's very, very sweet. He's scared of children because when he was a calf, children burnt his ears, and he became quite traumatized from that. And I was seeing these kind of scars on him, and I think that was quite in itself just powerful, to seeing this relationship that humans have to this animal different to us. And as I was brushing him, I started to feel this connection. And I think anyone who's grown up around like dogs or cats or whatever, you know what I mean when I talk about this kind of connection that you have when you're brushing them, you're taking care of them, and you can see they're loving it, they're enjoying it, and you're feeling that love towards them, and they're responding that love back to you. And and in this moment of brushing him, I was thinking, how am I feeling? And I was like, okay, well, one very clear thing I'm not feeling is I'm not feeling hungry. I'm not looking at this cow, this Vishnu, feeling like I want to eat him. I'm feeling just this love, this care, this peace. And it was a very calming energy. And then I started going around and I started to brush him on his head. And then as I was doing that, he put his head up and he wanted to be brushing the neck. So I started brushing his neck. And as I was doing that, he was moving his neck around and his eyes rolled back to the back of his head. And he made these noises I never knew cows could make. And this was a very, I guess, intimidating moment for me, because I kind of was looking at him there, just this innocent animal that was so full of love. And I reflected on how I'd lived my life, where I'd spent my whole life eating them and taking from them. And it was like I could see this ultimate betrayal that we've committed against these animals. So, and that was just what I was feeling. And so I started walking away because I wanted to process it. I was feeling quite emotional. And well, as I started walking away, Vishnu started following me, and he started just nudging me in the side because he wanted to keep being brushed. and like this big cow there. They're pretty intimidating animals when you see the size of them. So if they want to be brushed, yeah, I thought, okay, I better go back to brush him. So I was just brushing him on his head and just looking into his eyes. And in that moment, it was very clear to me, if I wanted to live my life, I have a choice. And I can choose to contribute towards the suffering of animals, or I can choose to reduce it as much as I could, practically possible. And it was very clear that's how I wanted to live the rest of my life then.
Mm.
And that was a huge shift for me, because it made me see the world in a complete different way. Not just towards animals, but towards the whole natural world and towards people as well. Because, yeah, we may look different, we may feel different and stuff like that, but this feeling of love, I think, is something that's very shared across all of us. And this was my moment where I really changed the way I see things.
Mm. Wow, what a transformation. It's beautiful. And in your time here, have you had any low moments or difficult moments, or what's been the most challenging?
I think the most challenging for me here is we're in a community where many people are coming and going. We've got amazing, incredible people here that have stayed many years, and they're like family for me. Yeah. A family here, I've had two children that was born in Sydenham on the forest, and I was here throughout their life. Like, yeah. I was here when they were born, so that they're so close to me. So I have this kind of connections, but also the connections of many people that have come here, and these very deep, strong connections, and people leave. Not everyone stays, and that's always the hardest thing. I've definitely developed much more peace with it, because it's also very enriching for me to know that these people are out there in the world doing their amazing things in their ways, in their different things. And yeah, sometimes it comes from a bit of a selfish perspective where I'm like, I wish they could all be doing it here. Yes. With me. But knowing that they're out there in the world, it's very hopeful, because the people I've met here are just, words can't describe the amazing, the incredible, inspiring, motivating, compassionate, kind, loving people. And to be able to be in an environment that attracts this energy, it has its beauty, but it's very hard when people you develop these deep connections with go on their way, and you miss them. And
it had to be a real practice of not being attached, and just seeing the beauty of the relationship and then letting it go, coming and going. Just to get an idea too, how many volunteers would come through suddenly in a year?
Between 1,300 to 1,500.
Wow.
And some of them are staying a couple of weeks, some of them are staying a couple of months. When you're here for like a year, you see people coming and going. But now I've been here for 7 years, I've seen like long-term volunteers come and go. Mm. People have stayed 1 year or 2 year or 3 year. They've come and I've seen their journey, and then they go. And again, it's really hard for them to leave, but the transformations I've seen in people, it's very powerful. And I think it's very easy to get negative what's going on in the world when we observe, when we see what's happening. But this place has given me a lot of hope, because sometimes you feel like, okay, how are we ever going to change society to do things in a more positive way, to have a more hopeful future? But then the shifts that I've seen in so many people here, from their day one to maybe even just 1 month later, or 1 year later, or even multiple years, this transformation, myself being seeing that in myself, but into so many other people as well, it's like very hopeful that, okay, we can change. This way of living that we see so predominant in modern day society isn't the only way. There are other ways, and we can change, and we can, when we connect with what's important for us, there's nothing that can stop us, really. So that's been very inspiring and hopeful for me.
Definitely. And even people coming through just for a tour, there might just be one spark of something that they can take back then to their lives, which is so beautiful.
A little seed planted. Seeds. Maybe. And we have more than 15,000 people that visit here every year. So volunteers is one, but we have huge traffic here. People were able to see this other way, and we've had people that have come here and said, I came on this tour like 7 years ago, and it was just in me, and then I got this calling that I wanted to do something like this, and then they've come. This is their journey, that they were ready in that moment. So you never know what seed you're planting.
Exactly. I mean, I was in Oroville 5 years ago, and I towards the end of my trip found out about Sydenham Forest, and I wasn't actually able to come that trip. But for 5 years, I always spoke to people about, oh, there's this community in near Oroville that lives like this, even though I hadn't even been here. And then this trip was like, oh, this is non-negotiable. I'm coming here the moment I get here. So that's really, it's powerful. And a question like that was on my mind, I'm sure might be on others' minds, is how is Sadhana Forest funded? Like, how do you...
So it's funded through donations. So we have different donations coming from different places, and the different projects are funded in different ways, like the different locations of Sadhana Forest. So here, Haiti and Kenya is just through donations mostly of just different people that have come and heard about this, seen this. They've maybe given their energy to it, but wasn't able to physically stay here for as long as they wanted, or help it in a more physical way, but financially that they had means to do it, so they could be donating $5 a month or $50 a month. We have these people we call sustaining members, people that have been able to support Sadhana Forest growing, because they've come here and seen something that they found, saw the hope in that and wanted to support. Recently we've been able to kind of diversify the funding through having organizations support us, so, and governments. So in the northeast of India we have 3 centers. This is funded by the state government of Meghalaya and the World Bank. It's very difficult to get this funding because we don't want to compromise on our integrity and our vision. So we've stayed very strong on that. And yeah, so it wasn't easy. We have a foundation in the US that's funded a project in Namibia, project in Madurai, the south of India as well. That's 8 hours from here. It's funded by the city of Geneva. So it comes from different sources, and we're always trying to explore different avenues to be able to get the funding to scale it up, because we have a model now and it's 20 years old and it's very effective. We're all volunteers here, so if you're looking at cost effectiveness in NGO work, everyone here is a volunteer, from someone who's here for a couple of weeks, or me myself for 7 years. I'm just here to give. I'm not doing this for my salary or anything. It's just this unconditional giving. So we're looking at more ways to get donations to scale it up. We have visions to start Sadhana Forest all over the world.
And that's just, funding's the question, isn't it?
Yeah. Funding and people, and people to help get funding. It's all connected.
Yeah, with the projects that are happening overseas, How did that expand? Was it, maybe you could give one example of project?
Haiti, the first one being the best example, where someone in around 2009 came and spoke to Avram and Yurit, the founders of Sadhana Forest, and said, you realize this is a model, right? And they're like, this is how we're choosing to live. And they're like, this is a model and it can be replicated. Mm. And they said, okay, let's see. And then they started looking, okay, if we were to do this somewhere else, where would we do it? And Haiti was one of the places that kind of came up. And then in early 2010, Haiti received an earthquake. That was the most deadly natural disaster in recent modern day history. So the team all met, and Aviram, the founder, said, we're thinking of starting a project in Haiti. And at once everyone stood up together and said yes. And that was where it started, and they started Sadhana Forest Haiti with no land, just a team with $1,000 that got donated through a woman who came here on a tour, and then over the years it was able to establish itself into a project. It made many mistakes. I think it was a big learning curve for Sadhana Forest to understand how to intervene in very heavily deforested and malnourished areas, with the socio-economic, political kind of challenges to really understand the complexities of this. And then Kenya was able to be started much better. Namibia, Avram describes it as the jewel of the crown, because we learned so much from all the different projects here in India and internationally that this was able to be started very well, very effectively, and we feel really ready now to scale it up.
Great. So, what's the vision for the future? Like, I remember you spoke to me briefly the other day about the bus.
Yeah, model. So one of the models that we have in India is a district called Virudhunagar. It's 1 hour south of Madurai, here in the south of India. And basically we have a team living in the bus, and the bus is staying in a village. We have a truck, and we basically plant trees in this village that we're staying in, and the truck goes around and plants trees in all the surrounding villages, and we're basically just planting food-producing trees around people's homes. It's in one of the driest areas of Tamil Nadu, south of India, and in an area where people are suffering from malnutrition a lot. So the idea is planting these food-producing trees around their homes to give them long-term food security, and this model is very effective. We don't have to buy land, we don't have the infrastructure, we just get this bus and then we can move this bus from village to village as we go around building this relationship with the local people while putting trees in the ground in a very efficient and effective way. And we're there to give the aftercare and to give them, share the knowledge and educate the local people in tree planting and tree care.
Yeah, like that education part of it too.
Yeah, and our vision is this is a scalable model as well. We can start more of these projects in India and even the world. We've got a mobile reforestation a truck in Kenya now where they're kind of doing something similar. So this is a model that we've been experimenting with, very effective. Having the permanent centres is very important as well. But yeah, if we could have more of these projects in India, people could spend time in one bus in Tamil Nadu and let's say another bus in Maharashtra. We've looked at different locations there, looking at the aridity and malnutrition index to find out which is the area that would benefit from the intervention of sadhana forest in the most effective way. So there's a place called Nandurbar, which has very high rates of deforestation, malnutrition. So we hope this will be potentially be the next one. And then Madhya Pradesh and all these kind of dry areas, especially in central India, could really benefit hugely the local people there in these more vulnerable areas that are being affected by climate change, ecosystems collapsing, droughts and famines. This model that we have by creating planting drought-resistant trees to create long-term food security, these trees will give food for around 100 years sometimes. So it's not just feeding them, but for generations. So it's a long-term solution addressing these issues of deforestation and malnutrition. And it's very effective.
That's awesome. Yeah. I want to go back now to the community here. So you welcome volunteers, and so what could you give a snapshot of what a day in the life of a volunteer here in Sadhana would look like?
First off, we're all volunteers here, but we're not doing any work. So that means we're not doing things to get an expectation for something in return. So we're practicing seva. So it's a Sanskrit word for selfless service. So how we can give unconditionally without expecting anything in return. So coming in with that mindset, I think, is really important. I'm here to give and to help, to serve, to support. And then we have a wake up call at 5:30 in the morning. Someone goes around playing some music, singing to gently wake us up for the day. And then we meet at 6 a.m. We do some stretches together. After that, everyone goes around and hugs each other if they want. It's a very beautiful way to start the day. And then we go for the different activities in the morning. So a team will stay back to prepare breakfast. Another team will go and feed the cows in the animal sanctuary. And the rest of the people go to the forest. Depending on the season, the forest work is different, from tree care to planting the trees, to watering the trees, different things like this. And then we come back and meet for breakfast at 8:45. And then at 9:45, we go out for what we call second saver. So first we have first saver, second saver. That's when, during second saver, is when we're doing less physical stuff in the community. Could be cooking lunch, cleaning, maintaining, firewood, composting, all these different things are kind of happening simultaneously around the community. And then we meet back for lunch, and then the afternoons are more or less free. We have some support we need in different days in the afternoon from different people. We spread this out around with everyone in the community. And then then we have the weekends where there are still some things that we need to do, but again, we spread this out around everyone in the community because we still have to feed the cows and feed the people. The forest can wait. So we're doing this. We spread this out between the team, everyone living here. And then in the evenings, we have different activities happening. So Sunday night is kind of where we have our weekly meeting, where we organize ourselves as a community about what we're doing for the following week with all the volunteers. Then Monday, we have what is known as a core value talk after dinner. It's a place where we can discuss one of the values. So it could be anything that I spoke about, really, like the idea of veganism or unschooling, substance-free living, gift economy, collaboration, and kind of picking one of these topics to go deeper with it. And then Tuesday, we have a sharing circle, so a space to practice deep sharing, deep listening. Wednesday we have our open stage. This is the fun night of the week where people can just share and do whatever they want.
Untalent show, right?
Yeah, it's also nicknamed the non-talent show because we have a lot of non-talented stuff. To know what you mean, you should come check it out.
What's your non-talent, Luke?
My non-talent? Different things depending on the day. Well, you'll be surprised about how many non-talents you can have.
Did you do one this week?
This week I didn't. No.
What was your last non-talent?
My last non-talent. I think I just shared a story of something that happened to me that was quite funny. Yeah, probably. Nice. And then, that's a really fun evening in the week. And then Friday, today is where we have our Friday tour. So right now the community is busy getting everything ready. We're cooking a big dinner. We're going to have a lot of visitors join us for dinner. It's our deep clean day. So we get all the community looking all tidy. And the kitchen team's making the food, amazing dessert as well. We'll have a bus bring people into Sadhana Forest, or two buses, and we'll show them around. We'll watch a movie together and we'll all eat dinner together. Today I think we're cooking for around 120 people, and that's our week.
And then there's also, like, because you have a lot of people that come here to volunteer who have different things to offer. I notice that you have different just offer different workshops, like yoga or lots of things.
I've seen the most crazy stuff here over the years. Yeah, people doing different things. And it's so much fun learning from people, this knowledge sharing, again, unconditionally. People are sharing what they want, and that's really helps build this sense of community that we have here.
Yeah, you can really feel the community and the positive culture here. Special, and I guess with that, of course, we're people and there might be conflict and there might be disagreements and things, but I'm interested to know how that is resolved. And
So I think preventative is kind of one of the very effective things. A lot of people that come here, they're like, why is there very little conflict here? Like, how does that work? And we haven't been able to pinpoint for sure exactly what it is, but we have our ideas. And one thing is the food that we're eating. It's known as like very sattvic food, very calming. When you're eating a lot of like meat and animal products and stuff, it can build this kind of fiery feeling inside you, where you may be a bit more short-tempered, and you're eating these stress hormones with these animals that were being sent into a slaughterhouse, so you're going to be absorbing this as well. So this is going to kind of heighten the intensity of these energies that you're feeling inside you. So I think the food that we're eating, it keeps us just relatively calm in a sense. But even with saying that, there are still moments, and it's all about the way everyone who comes to live here is living in this way with this intention to live in a more compassionate way. And we're human, so this is a journey. It's going to take a lot of commitment and time for to transform, to evolve inside of each other, so kind of respecting and understanding each other's journeys, but then facilitating conversations with two people with their disagreements, how we can see it. We're living in the same intention, we have the common goal of living in a more compassionate way and living in a community. So when there are misunderstandings, it's mostly just coming from miscommunication, not understanding and seeing the other person. So how we can sit people down. It's not like two people here want to live different ways, because let's say in the outside world, you have someone that wants to live in a more selfish way and someone wants to give more, then there's always going to be this conflict because there are two people choosing to live in a different way. Here we're all kind of choosing to live this way. It's a choice. No one's forced to stay here. Everyone's making the choice. So with that kind of mindfulness to this, I think there's this common understanding, and we facilitate things, discussions to kind of restore this kind of trust and this understanding. And
The environment is very mindful here, so I can imagine how that would foster that.
If you want to come here, be really aggressive to everyone, then it's not going to work. And you can find somewhere else for that.
I'm sure people may have anger issues or something when they come here, and you just feel like it just the forest just washes it away, and the food, and that's good. I wanted to know what the most common question you get is from people who come visit or volunteer, like who are intrigued about your way of living.
How did you adapt, I think, is a big one, because this way of living is so different to, I think, what most people understand when they come into this place. It's very different to how people have lived. So a lot of people ask, how did you adapt? And for me, like, I don't feel like I can give a fair answer to this question, because a lot of the long-term team, when they come here, you ask them this and they've all found it very difficult. Not all of them, but a lot of them. I came here and I came in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m. I arrived, and I just slept in the main hut because there was no one to show me where I could go, because the taxi driver was very late to pick me up. And so I came here in the middle of the night, and my first time in India, my first night ever in India, and in a forest, so it was a bit scary. Came here and then the morning came and I started seeing people waking up. It was a weekend day, so there wasn't so many people around. There was a lot of people that were chilling, but I saw people in the breakfast, preparing it together, talking together, meeting each other, and then just seeing the sun come up and just feeling this calmness here. Mm. And I was like, wow, like, this is beautiful. And then, yeah, I was just fell in love. Like, it was like love at first sight for me. Felt like home very quickly.
That's nice. And what about other people that you've seen? Is there like a common challenge that you see people have difficulty diving to, or is it everything?
Yeah, yeah. Everything. Yeah. Like, I can't say a common challenge, because the compost toilets that we have, living in huts, living so close to nature, living in community. We're only eating non-processed foods. People here maybe more common.
Yeah, people will be going through a detox in ways. Huge, and that can bring up lots of stuff that's been there but then it stirs up to the surface. So
is a very interesting part of the social aspect of it, because so I had this question, like, I was seeing people and people were getting very kind of emotional here, and I was a bit confused because I was feeling so happy here, and then I was seeing people go through these kind of deep emotional challenges here, and I was like, but why are they responding to Saturn Forest like this? And the more I started speaking to the people, understanding to people, it was actually the only type in their life where they felt safe to be open to that, to bring it to the surface, to be vulnerable. And because there was a huge support network
and they've,
here.
And they've stopped.
Yeah,
and then they've
can slow down. Yeah. And when you're in a space where you feel safe to be your true self and to be vulnerable and to allow that to come to the surface, it can be very, very hard for people. But luckily, the supportive environment here is this compassionate way designed to support in this journey for people. Mm. So, I think it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. For you and family, I imagine family would be a big one for people if they're living here very long term.
Yeah, okay. Actually, everyone in India asks me, what do your family think? Yeah, that's actually the most common question.
I think that'd be a really interesting one if you don't mind sharing a little bit about that.
My family have always been very supportive. They encouraged me to leave my job and to come experience this when I was considering it. And I think that was very unique because I had a good job and I was starting this career path. That I think a lot of parents would have this fear for their child to leave something that they're feeling quite stable in, but they really encouraged this, and I think it's still quite hard for them to deeply understand why and the what, but at least they accept it. Yeah, know that I'm happy, and I am very happy, and that's very clear for them, so they don't doubt that.
Yeah. Have any of them come and visited you here?
Yeah, most of my family. I've just got one brother still waiting to come. My two other siblings.
What's his name?
Sam.
Sam.
Come on. So he'll be here at some point. Maybe he'll come in February, he was saying.
Yeah.
But it's not the first February he said that. So let's see.
There's a festival on in February too,
exactly,
isn't there?
For that.
What's it called? The festival?
The Vegan Forest Festival.
Vegan Forest Festival.
Our third edition.
Cool.
Yeah.
How many people come for that?
So first year was like 400. Last year was 700. This year we're going to aim for 1,000 people.
That's great. Put on your calendar, people.
Yeah, it's all free. We're cooking for everyone. So we've never cooked for 700 people before until the last one. We've never cooked for 1,000 people, so we'll find out how that works. And it's not just cooking for 1,000 people, but doing that for 3 meals a day for 3 days.
Yeah.
It's really how we can push this idea of how much we can give to its limit, and the energy that is created in that space where everyone's just coming together. It's kind of like the Avengers Assemble kind of idea, where like all of our experienced volunteers who may have gone to do different things, they all come back for this weekend.
Wow.
And we're like at our absolute strongest, and the energy is just so
making
vibrant.
Me want to come back.
Yeah. And like you see something that's so unique, like a festival that is substance free, that everyone who's facilitating anything didn't get paid to do this. They've come from different countries all over India to do workshops and talks and cooking classes, perform, and all the food served as a gift, not expecting anything in return. Everyone who's holding a space here being an ethical vegan, so showing that this is mainstream. It's not a a niche movement anymore, that this can be the normal, that we can really create a culture where not harming animals and taking from them and using them can be normal.
Wow. And sorry, I cut in there because you were talking about your family and they came and visited. How did they have a good experience?
Like my sister adapted pretty easily because she's traveled a lot. My dad really connected very emotionally to this place. My mum, it was a bit of a shock for her. My youngest brother, he was definitely out of his comfort zone, and but I feel like he will hopefully come back again. Earlier this year, I had my cousin come, and he came for 6 weeks. And this was very powerful for me, because a lot of my family have come and they've seen how I live, but he came and he saw it, but then deeply understood it. Because he was here for longer and he was really able to embrace it. And then when he was leaving, he started getting quite emotional. He started crying and he said, "Now I understand why you do what you do." Because there's a lot of kind of conceptions and ideas in my family and the people that even they see it, they don't, like, it's hard for them to deeply understand, like, why I've dedicated my life, the last 7 years of my life, to put all my energy into this place. But he came away understanding it, and that was very powerful for me, to have someone in my family to really connect with it.
Beautiful. For people who are listening who may never come to India, what message would you give them, or what question actually would you just pose to people, just to have them ponder about their way of living? Or
I think to be very mindful of that, and deeply consider that this gift of life that we have this opportunity, is in a very complicated world, but we do have some sort of freedom to choose how we're living, and to really consider how you want to live. And when you start to see how you can then vision it, and to make this decision, okay, can I put this into action, and can I truly live in a way that I'm not compromising on my integrity, my values, because I feel like a lot of society, unfortunately, encourages this compromising on the way of living. But there are ways that you can live that you don't have to compromise, and this is an example that it's possible. That a small family came here and turned this dry piece of land into a forest, and now we have thousands of people coming here all the time, and to show that we can live with nature and not against it. I think the story that is told about humanity is, we're a cancer, we're a parasite, we're destroying and destructing everywhere we go, and here we can show people it doesn't have to be like that. You can live in a way that's not only sustainable, but in a way that dramatically improves the environment around you. So if you're thinking, okay, how I want to live, then really deeply consider what's stopping me from doing that. And the jump to reach that could be the scariest, most hardest thing that you've ever done, but if you can truly arrive at that point to say, this is exactly how I want to live, it's a very beautiful feeling of life, and I feel very grateful to have that.
Thank you. So people can come here and volunteer. What's the process for that?
Like, just send us an email. Everyone's welcome. My youngest volunteer is a 1.5-year-old who was born here. Our oldest volunteer is a 70-year-old woman who's been here for 2 years. So age doesn't matter. Everyone's welcome, and just send us an email, and we'll be so excited to welcome you.
Is there a limited, a time commitment?
For foreigners it's 10 nights minimum. It should be higher than that, because I think after around a week and stuff, you just start settling into this place for a lot of people. I think if people can come for 4 weeks, I think they can take this adjustment period to settle and then start to really experience it. I think that's important.
Do you have any recommendations of any kind of books or documentaries that people can look into to look at alternative ways of living? Because there's so many, Sardana Forest represents so many different areas. Is there anything that you have
that's helpful? The most inspiring thing for me is what kind of set me on this journey to find a different way of living is something called The Venus Project. They've done a few documentaries. One of them is called Paradise or Oblivion. Oblivion is where we're heading if we keep living this way we are, but paradise is this other option. Oblivion isn't the only option. And another one they've done there, the more recent one, is called The Choice Is Ours. And it really empowered me to really think about this question that I asked, that how do you want to live? And they showed me that there was one way of living that was more theorized. It wasn't actually in physical, practical form, but it made a lot of sense to me, and I felt motivated to go and see what that meant and find different ways of doing things. So yeah, the Venus Project, cool. Two documentaries, Paradise or Oblivion, and The Choice Is Ours.
I'll link to those in the episode notes so people can see.
And a book I really like is Ishmael by Daniel Quinn.
How do you say that?
Ishmael.
Ishmael. How do you spell that?
Ishmael. Okay. And yeah. Daniel Quinn. It looks at a very powerful way to look at why humanity is living the way that we're living from a non-human-centric perspective. Because a lot of when we try and study and understand why humanity is living, we're always integrating our conditioning and our very narrow understandings of that. But when you take it out and explore it from a non-human-centric perspective, I won't spoil the way the book works, but it was very clever. It was done in a very clever way, and it really gave me a lot of kind of insight to why we're living like this. And it's not we're inherently flawed as a species. There was things that happened in our history and reasons for that led to this way of living, and there's also reasons that we can change that. And there's different ways.
Cool, you've added to my book list as well.
Yeah, cool.
Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we wrap up?
I guess I would just like to share that it can be very intimidating, very scary to look at changing your life, but often on the other side of fear can be something very beautiful, and you don't know until you try. And if you're feeling that you're a bit lost in your life and you're maybe not having that sense of purpose, I think it's a very relatable feeling for a lot of people in the world right now. I encourage you to go explore, to find out what's out there, because I feel so grateful to find my purpose, what I'm doing, and be able to put all my passion and energy into that. And I want everyone to be able to find their place. And this is just one way to live. And we're not saying this is the best, the right, the only way and how everyone should live. This is just one way, and this is right for me. Maybe it could be right for you as well, but there could be also many other ways out there of living that can connect with you. So don't take this opportunity of life that we got and just accept a standard that's not up to your expectations or your dreams or your visions, but see how you can reach that. And coming here was how I was able to do that. And I hope everyone can find their place and their space.
It's very inspiring, and I'm so happy that you did find your place, because I see that you bring a lot of passion and pure and genuine love to this place.
Thank you
so much for sharing, and I hope to come back here in the near future.
We're not going anywhere, so,
and that's one thing I want to just quickly, you've found love here.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Havana, yeah.
Yes. How long have you been?
Just over a year now.
Over a year. That's so special. Did you ever think you would?
I was definitely hoping. I definitely had the
intention. But you waited 6 years, patiently waiting.
It was
that's
a journey.
Really special.
Feeling very happy.
That's really lovely. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
Okay. I hope you were able to gain something from learning more about Sardana Forest and Luke's story. It really is a special place, and just by spending a short period of time in the forest, it's amazing the shift it can create within. And what I really love about Sardana Forest is that they aren't just living this way to isolate themselves from the world challenges, but nor are they aggressively shaming others for how they are living. They really are just showing what is possible by doing, and are inviting people into their way of life. And by doing this, I feel it invites people to maybe pause and think more about how they can live this precious life more compassionately. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. Please feel free to rate the podcast, share with any friends who this may interest. Sending you love, my fellow humans, wherever you are.